Welcome back to Conscious Fitness and Divine Body. Your show tonight is going to be fantastic because we have the pleasure to receive our own personal metaphysical teacher who is going to explain a lot of concepts and a lot of ideas that are coming forth right now. And she's going to explain a little bit more and obviously help us start to clear up all of our questions about responsibility, about the indigo children, about the earth changes and what she sees in it and how she, how we can actually, what should we do through it. And for that, tonight, our best teacher is Jacqueline Lloyd. Jacqueline, you're with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Hi, Jacqueline. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much, and thank you for taking the time to spend a precious hour of your time with us tonight to share your vision and share a lot of concept that and explain to our listeners a lot of things that maybe we should be starting to really get on if we want to really live this new era that is starting. So. One other thing, we're going to jump into the subject right away because I know that 55 minutes, it seems a long time, but it always amazes me how it just goes quick. One of your motto is responsibility.
That's correct, personal responsibility. And responsibility in terms of everything, every choice that we make hundreds of choices every day. Mm-hmm. And they dictate the experience that we have. And so people who do take responsibility and are aware when they make the choices and they make the choice to live joyfully can and do live joyfully. And so pain is not a requirement. Pain is a choice.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about taking responsibility, it is it really about like blaming? When we don't want to do that, is it really about blaming others for whatever happens to us?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, people avoid responsibility in a lot of different ways, and mm-hmm. the best way that I know to do it is just to watch myself. I watch myself making choices, and if I feel myself getting triggered, if I have an emotional reaction about something, usually mm-hmm. I stop and I try to take a good look at it and see what belief system is being triggered, because the belief mm-hmm. systems are what block us from our heart. So mm-hmm. if we can dismantle the belief systems, maybe we inherited a behavioral pattern from a parent, or maybe we learned it in school, or maybe we saw it on TV and we just absorbed it and we didn't realize it. If there's a reaction that doesn't feel peaceful and knowing and connected, then there's something there that needs to be looked at. And so often we don't want to do that. And mm-hmm. I'm certainly guilty of that too. You know, sometimes I really don't want to look at something, but that's just going to get triggered over and over and over again until finally I say, okay, I'm going to mm-hmm. look at it. And then it usually clears up really quickly.
Mm-hmm. So this is really something that has been shown to us or learned. This is not something that, like you were talking about, coming from the heart. This is not the authentic us that is acting upon an event. This is really a reaction that has been learned to be in. Okay. That makes total sense. So when you are talking about this heart, what does it mean? Like, is there like the denial of the heart, which is really what is happening? What does it mean?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that is the period that we're in right now. It's a period of testing, and it's a period during which each one of us will be given the opportunity to make a choice. Are we going to honor our heart and our knowingness, or will we be in denial of the heart, as you said? Mm-hmm. And it's really an interesting time, because people who are embracing the change and who are doing the work and who are dismantling belief systems are making quantum leaps in consciousness. I mean, it's truly amazing. And we see this especially with the children, too. Mm-hmm. They are able to process and create in the physical and so much faster than normal. So it really is a time, it's a really exciting time. It can also be a very scary time. And mm-hmm. the heart is our connection with the divine, you know, life force, whatever you want to call it, and God, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And there's an old saying that if God wanted to hide, God would hide in the human heart, because that's the last place people would look. So it really is getting down to the core, the essence, and the end of this school as we know it.
Correct. So I remember that last week we were the guest that we had on our show was, you know, had that specialized vision about change, and definitely making a change from living from into the fear into living into the heart is going to require changes, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, sorry.
Go ahead.
Some people, of course, will have to work harder at it than other people.
Okay.
Those who've already started to break out of the mold of what they feel they should do because maybe their parents put that in there, you know, oh, I need to be a dentist because it's respectable, but I really want to be a dog groomer, that sort of a thing. So the people who've already started shifting, who have already started breaking out of the paradigm that they've been living in, are going to have a much easier time. So those who've been dragging their feet are you know, going to have a much harder time.
Mm-hmm. So when there's a resistance to it, it's going to be harder. So the like taking responsibility means that there is a need for self-discovery to really find out what pieces of the puzzle that, you know, create our life are not working anymore, are not serving the our really true purpose.
Right.
So, right. So there's a need to look at it and just decide, okay, is that coming from something that I've learned or something that I've been taught that I should do, and does it feel right with me? There's like this feeling right that needs to be the leading energy.
Exactly, exactly. And often it doesn't take that much work to figure out the difference. Sometimes if it's a really deeply entrenched core belief system, that those are a lot harder to get at because there are so many pieces and so many different ways that it affects our lives. But once we release ourselves from them, they're usually, it's a simple concept that has gotten very convoluted and twisted and into all parts of decision-making process. And it can be something simple like fear of rejection or the fear that society is going to persecute. You know, those of you who have vision and who are afraid to share what you know and what you see, you know, there's a persecution issue there, and we feel the mass consciousness won't accept us. And so that can block vision as well, and that can block the knowingness too. So it really is, it is our responsibility to find out what we're creating in our world, and then we make a choice. We either live joyfully or we live in pain.
Definitely. So there is a personal consciousness and a personal awareness of what we live individually, and then there's a collective agreement as well on that responsibility. Because we, you know, our individual life, we are responsible for whatever the choices that we are making for the next, you know, and the decision that we are taking in our next step for our personal life. But then there is a responsibility for the group as well.
Exactly. And I think we're really starting to see that with the election. I'm actually very happy with the fact that so many people are getting involved. And I, you know, I don't care what side of the fence they're on.
Sure.
Left, far right, middle, you know, it doesn't matter. Just what matters to me is that they're getting involved. And I think that's wonderful, because for too long we've been giving our power and our responsibility away to elected leaders. And we've been letting them run the show. And now all of a sudden a lot of people are saying enough is enough. And I think that's wonderful.
And it is really aligning with this new energy coming through and this new need for awakening. I think that people, you're right, are really actually discovering themselves and realizing that they are actually much more powerful than they have been told they were, and realizing that it's time to make the change.
Oh, exactly. Wow, you say that very well. That's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, it's come to my next question that is very interesting to me, and really it's very exciting to me to have a vision from a metaphysical teacher, someone who really understands and will be able to put it out there. It's, explain the significance of this year 2012, because granted that, you know, it's something that I've been awakened to for maybe, I would say, a year and a half, like before that. And maybe, granted, I was not really into all those stuff, but somehow, you know, 2012 just come, and books are coming, and people are starting to talk about it. What is it about the 2012?
That's a very good question. You know, anytime anybody comes up with a deadline or a point, remember the year 2000, that was a big deal. Everybody got worked up about that. I do think 2012 is going to be significant, but at the same time, I don't think it's a deadline. It's not like one day the world will be one way and then after December 21st the world will be another way. I think it's just a marker. And it's really interesting how the ancient Mayan people used that year and pointed to that year as the end of our age. And so did the ancient Tibetans, and so did the Native Americans. So it's not just an isolated thing. And so I think that's fascinating. And what it really has to do with is the solar system lining up with the galactic center in such a way that all this new energy is being brought to the planet. And, of course, as we move through the galaxy and get closer to this eye, I call it the God's eye, because it really is just the center. And you can look this up in science as well. They've identified that they call it dark matter, that there's a giant mass of dark matter in the center of the universe. Well, it's actually life matter. It's life energy. And so as we approach that point where we are in alignment with it, all these things are shifting all the way down to a subatomic level. So we're seeing the natural disasters, we're seeing the climate change, we're seeing the children, we're seeing people either getting sick or being miraculously healing themselves. We're seeing all these things, and they're all related to this idea that we're shifting on an energetic level to be coming into alignment with this new energy.
So everything is part of a greater plan that, you know, because I have this conflict when I talk to about it to with friends or, you know, people who want to know a bit more, and there I come with my theory, and then I have this conflict back. People are telling me, well, you know, we are taught new, like with the new age belief system, that we are we are all powerful. We have the power to change whatever is coming if there's, you know, enough individuals grouping, you know, together to create a change. So we can really make a change. And then, obviously, there is a shift that is occurring on a mass level that is somehow part of a bigger plan, that whatever, you know, collectively we put our energy or mind or focus or intention into it will not change that shift.
I'm not totally sure I understand.
Okay, let's try to do it again. Like, we agree that there's a shift occurring, and that is happening no matter what.
Right.
This shift is going to, seems to create disaster, natural disaster, things happening on a, you know, human level and earth level, right?
Okay, I think I see now. And so your point is that your friends say, well, if we all get together, we can avert these disasters.
Correct.
Happening.
Correct.
Okay. Well, the thing is, the people who are able to have the most impact right now are the people who are shifting with the energy.
Okay.
And when we shift with the energy, we do see the greater plan, and we are aware of the greater plan or just the movement of the Earth and how she's coming into alignment as well. And natural disasters, of course, really, they can be affected by groups of people and even by individuals. I've been through a couple of forest fires out here. I live in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove through flames with my daughter in the car because it came so fast and nobody knew where it was, and it was awful. And lots of people lost their homes, and I think it was 2,000 homes, and the only reason that we're still alive is because I listen to my intuition. So that's another thing that I like to really talk to people about, and it's the knowingness and being in touch with your heart is not just an exercise in, you know, finding lotto numbers. It's going to keep you alive as these changes occur, because you will just know when it's time to move, you'll know when it's time to leave, you'll know when it's time to do certain things, you'll just know. And as we get closer, I mean, they have floods in the Midwest and the heat wave in the East, and you know, as we get closer to 2012, it really is imperative for people to start listening to themselves on a deep level. And again, that's part of the test. But at the same time, I know that people can affect the path of a fire, for example, if if they put the energy out there, you know, the fire will go around. That happened mm-hmm. to me during the second fire. I was able to pull it together, and the fire went around our house, which was great because we were still there. And I've heard people affecting hurricanes as well, and I do believe that. But at the same time, there is a certain amount of shifting that Mother Earth has to do, and mm-hmm. this is how it's coming about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a trust to have and a faith in the fact that people who are shifting within that energy will be at the right, in quote, the right place at the right time for whatever they have to leave and experience.
Right, exactly. But again, there's a difference, and this is a recent revelation for me. There's a difference between faith and knowing, because faith is more of putting power outside of yourself, and a knowingness is just the awareness that you will know what to do. There's a subtle difference there, but faith tends to be praying to a power outside of yourself, which is a recipe for disaster.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. So this intuition is definitely what we are learning through this shift as well.
And it's becoming a lot easier, too. I don't know if you've noticed this as well, but
things
are just, it's picking up, and the veil is thinning. In ancient times, they called it the veil. And it's thinning, and it's really remarkable.
Definitely. So, so self-discovery brings self-empowerment. And self-empowerment allows the expansion of this intuition, this intuitive gift that we actually had as a birthright, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if someone would come to you and said, what should I do? That's one thing that you would definitely tell them, like, try to listen to, you know, the cellular message, try to listen to you, try to understand who you are.
Yes, and I tell the story of the fire that I went through, because we actually called 911 and asked them what we should do, because we were huddled with a bunch of people, and mm-hmm. I knew that we had to go. We were at the bottom of a canyon. We couldn't see anything, but I just knew we had to get out of there, because I knew it was coming. And we called 911, and the 911 operator told us we were fine and we were safe and we should stay put. Well, if we had, we would have all died, because that house burned down not even an hour after we had left.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, and, you know, when people say, well, I'm not really sure if it's my inner voice, my inner knowing, or if it's my mind. And, mm-hmm. of course, that's all part of it. That's part of learning the process. And the best way to increase the volume of the knowing and the inner voice is to dismantle the belief systems that block us from that awareness. So really, it's about finding out what part of you is resisting being connected to the divine whole, what part of you thinks maybe separation is real, maybe we are all separate, we're not all, you know, linked in harmony with oneness.
Definitely. Beautiful. One question comes to my mind right there. We're talking about disaster, we're talking about responsibility, and what comes to me is that what the media and, you know, some governmental, I'm going to say it, some parties, like put forth with the global warming, is that, you know, is global warming is actually a term that people who are not into metaphysics and spiritual, those spiritual, understandings call this shift, this energetic shift? Or is it something else, like this global warming where we see ice melting and all those changing in the climate? Those are due to this shift that is occurring, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So the fact that people actually call those global warming, it's actually the same term. Those are two similar events.
Well, they're definitely related, and I don't like to use the term global warming. I prefer climate change, because when people say global warming, then the populace, the people who don't believe, say, well, it's snowing in Texas in May, and so, the Earth isn't warming. It's not real. Again, and I like to look at the history of geology and of the ice core sampling and all the stuff that Earth has left traces of for us to understand the shift. This has happened before. It will happen again. So So you see periods of warming in the past, followed by ice ages. You've seen polar shifts. You've seen magnetic polar shifts. As the ice melts from the ice caps, of course, that's going to change the Earth's rotation, and things will happen. And it's all about climate change. It's about the climate coming into a whole new way of being, and different patterns emerging. And right now, we don't really know what it's going to look like at the end. I mean, I don't know exactly where it's going to be tropical or where it's going to be cold. But I do know that nothing is for sure.
Yes. So how do natural disasters tie into our abilities to take responsibility?
Well, again, it's a test.
It's
a test, and it's a big one.
Yes, it seems it is. So
yeah.
The more we it is actually like really being at school.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Well, we are in school. This is the Earth School. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
And the Earth School is about to change. We're about to go through final exams. I call them final exams, and then we move on.
Okay. So what can people do to take back their power?
Well, again, it's about dismantling the belief systems and trying to support each other in doing that. And it comes up in so many different ways. You know, it's amazing how school is truly magnificently orchestrated. I mean, you can... In a grocery line at the supermarket, if you're paying attention, you can watch yourself get triggered by something. Maybe somebody puts the stick that divides the food. Maybe they push your food over a little bit, or you know, and you just think, well, you know, get your hands off my food.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and then you can say, oh, now wait a minute, let me look at that. Let me see. I feel like he doesn't respect me. I feel like he doesn't respect my boundaries. That's interesting. So maybe I feel that, you know, people can't be trusted. Maybe I feel that people are just going to take advantage of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you have that unconscious belief, that's going to dictate that people do take advantage of you, that people are going to push you around, because you create what you get. And so the key is to watch what you're creating and just be in an adventure. You know, think, oh, this is fun. I'm a detective, and I'm figuring out what my brain is doing when I'm not paying attention.
Yes. I think it is really a good way to put it, like being an adventurer, being the Indiana Jones of our life. I think that's really cool. So do you think that we are getting to a point right now where actually there's more and more people are becoming aware of that pattern and the necessity to change?
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It's so exciting. People are waking up all over, and especially around children. I've been doing interviews for a while now, and in the past 8 days, I've done 9 interviews only about the children. People are very, very concerned about the children. And so I try to bridge the gap between the children and the adults. And the fact that they are concerned and that they are paying attention and they are realizing that the current way of handling the issues that the children have is simply not working. So the more people say, this is just not working, we have to come up with a new way, no matter what it's about, if it's about politics, if it's about children, if it's about healthcare, whatever it is that you know, makes people stand up and say, now wait a minute, I think that's exciting. I just think it's great. It's all part of the shift. The people are waking up.
So you mentioned the children, and obviously there's a lot of things that we're going to talk about, and especially the Indigo children, because it's a lot of, I have a lot of people asking me about that, so he felt that he was right to put it out there and having someone knowledge to discuss about it. So tell us a little bit more. We have a shift coming. Within the last 10 to 15 years, there's a new era and that comes through, and then those children are coming up. So who are they? Why are they called the Indigo children? What are they here for? How to handle them?
Okay, yeah.
Let's see. Question one.
Yeah, right. Number one. Well, they were termed Indigo children back in the early 80s when the researchers who noticed there was a pattern within these children were on the fringe, and they were in metaphysical studies, and they noticed an indigo color in the children's auras, and so that's where the term came about. I prefer children of the 21st century or children of now, because it's not only indigo now. There are also different levels of children coming in waves, and it's fascinating. And pretty much from 1988 on, it's most children who are this special, unique way, and they carry a very beautiful energy. I mean, they are incredible. They're wise. They're mm-hmm. they're smart. They think in 3D, where we tend to be more linear. They're mm-hmm. they're incredible kids, and they're here to help us. You know, mm-hmm. they came to assist with this shift because for them, what we're shifting into is perfectly normal. The
yes.
way things are now is just not normal, and it's not acceptable. So
mm-hmm.
when they start getting older and they start exerting their power and they start coming into their power, it's going to help shift the mass consciousness in a really beautiful way because they're ready, and they already embody this new consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So they are born, as we all are, born with the knowingness, but then because of our upbringing, we are being taken like away from it, right?
Right. When the difference with these children is that they won't allow that. Their knowingness is so much stronger, and their emotional sensitivity is so heightened. They do not handle being put into conformity, and that's what we're seeing in the schooling system. When
yes.
they are forced into conformity, we have all these things like ADHD and ADD, and you know, now the new one is bipolar, which why
yes.
anybody would want to put a child on bipolar medication is just beyond me. I just can't understand that at all.
I'm with you totally.
You know,
totally.
When I have a parent come to me and saying, "Oh, my child was just diagnosed with ADHD, what do I do?" I say, "Well, is he or she able to play a video game for hours?" And usually they say, "Oh, yeah, they can do the video thing all day if I let them." I said, "Well, then there's no attention deficit."
Correct.
Because if they can focus on something that they're enjoying, then they're perfectly capable of focusing. So
yes.
really then the question is, what is going on? Is the child bored? Usually they're bored in school. They
yes.
don't see why they need to learn this stuff. They don't see why it's going to apply to their lives. They don't
yes.
understand why this is considered useful information. And they just won't do it. I mean, you probably remember being in school and learning this stuff and going, okay, now I have to memorize the 50 states or whatever it is, right?
Well, it's very interesting because I remember, and you know, I was in France at that time, but I had no interest whatsoever in physics or biology or chemistry. And really, I remember I was probably about 14 years old having a discussion with my teacher, telling him, "Explain to me why I need to learn that. It doesn't make any sense to me. Why would I learn?" And it was a specific topic on how to calculate or measure the capability of a spring to extend. I mean, hello. So he was like, "I just don't understand." And, you know, he was telling me, "Well, you know, it's just to shape your brain and, you know, make you think." And
yeah.
and the deal is it just didn't make any sense at all. Exactly. So it does make total sense that there's a need to reshape the way the education has been, you know, has been done, obviously, because those kids are really going to be out of it.
Right. They just won't do it. They won't play the game, and good for them, you know. I mean, I think that's fantastic. And for those of us that did have the same kind of questions in school, you know, why do I have to learn to calculate molecular, you know, weight?
Yes.
I mean, what does this do for me?
Yes.
It's just one of those things. And if we can be honest with ourselves and say, okay, what did we learn? What was worthwhile?
Yes.
You know, and get rid of what didn't work, then I think, you know, everything will get better. But see, a lot of adults, they tend to have this impression that, well, we did it, so they have to do it. I don't know if
yes.
it's a payback thing or if it's just considered, well, it's just part of life. It's like going to the dentist. I don't know. I'm still
yeah.
trying to get to the bottom of that. But people are talking about it, so that's good.
You're right. It is something that has been brought forth, and I think there's a lot of parents who are really concerned about it, and because I think, you know, this world of this indigo children's world has been putting out there, and I think that everyone is starting to, I mean, a lot of people are starting to see through what they, you know, what appears to be just a small child, that this so much more, and that the behavior is actually showing a different pattern than what we used to be earlier. So I think you're right. There's a waking up, and it's coming obviously at the right time. So So they are, those Indigo children are obviously very important for what's happening in humanity, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, so how are they going to actually act, or are they going to be showing us the way? Like, okay, that's what it is, and you know, there's not, it's the way to do it.
Well, they're keeping us honest. That's the way I see it. They're keeping us honest, and they're forcing us to look at things that don't work anymore. They're forcing us to examine the belief systems that we inherited that we continue to act out, you know, day after day, year after year. And they're shifting us by holding this new energy of honesty and saying, you know, this is the old way, just doesn't work anymore. So it's about looking at belief systems and traditions and, you know, out with the old and in with the new. And they're helping us by not playing the game. They won't do the old way. They just won't do it. So they're here to teach us. And a lot of times if parents will let themselves learn from their children as well, it's a miraculous thing, because the kids did pick them for a reason, and they came to reach them in some very special way. And I know you probably felt this with your children too. They're just incredible teachers, and what they have to teach us individually and as a whole is exactly what we need to do this shift.
And you know, it reminds me, I have a friend who was telling me that he's going through a time with his partner, his wife, that is not very happy right now, and he was telling me that they're going through anger phases, and obviously there's some word out there, and the child, unfortunately, is witnessing it, and he's the one, he's 10 years old, and he's the one who's catching his dad, telling him, why do you let yourself, you know, pull down like that? Why?
Wow.
A 10-year-old who is telling that to an adult because he sees, you know, what's happening from a very, like, a larger picture, I think that is truly showing, you know, where what he sees is true and what he sees is not.
Right. Yeah, well, that's right. Beautiful. And good for the dad for paying attention.
Totally.
Yeah. That's
totally
wonderful. I mean,
I know. So I think, yeah, there's definitely those saying, those smart remarks and, you know, and notes that you can hear that really is like, is it really a child who say that? But yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Right.
And they have, you know, I have two little ones, and the first one is 2.5. And granted, he has some behaviors that really are... I question myself, and that's the next question that comes to me. It's like, how can you tell that your child is an Indigo child? Is there any special characteristic that you should actually look into to define if, you know, there's something to be defined, but to maybe find out about it?
Well, there are certain characteristics that they do share, and again, it goes beyond just the Indigo. It goes into... people have named them crystal children or crystalline. I don't really know exactly how they've determined that, but I'm pretty sure at this point that all the kids that were born after about 95 are this special group. But again, I had a conversation a few weeks ago with a young man, a teenager, who was very upset about the labeling, and I said, well, you know, certainly an Indigo child, that's a fairly flattering label. And he said, it's still a label. And I said, well, my generation, for example, is called Generation X, the slackers. I would rather be an Indigo than a slacker. And he said, I know what you're saying, but the labels are of the old consciousness as well.
Yes.
And the minute you apply a label to someone, you limit them. You suppress their individuality. And this happens particularly in school, because maybe the kid is just going through a phase. Well, maybe there's trouble at home that is just, you know, a couple of months long, and then it resolves itself. In the meantime, the child has been labeled with Asperger or ADHD or any number of things, and then they're forced to live with that. And teachers that accept them into the classroom, as they move up in the grades, the teachers already think they know how the child is going to behave, and they never get a second chance. Once that label is applied, that's it. And he seemed to feel that, you know, saying that they were indigo children fell in the same category. So
mm-hmm.
he made me really think about it. I mean, talk about the teachers, right? So now I
You're right. I use the term indigo,
but, you know, I don't like labels, and here's why. Because he had a really good point.
Yeah, totally. That's a very good point. So they are emotional in their behavior, though.
Yes.
Like, they have the tendency to really live in the moment and really react fast.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it not something that is a characteristic?
No, their emotions, they have very, 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 very heightened sense of emotions. And they're,
okay.
That's really one of the main markers of this group, if you want to call it a group.
Okay.
They are, and the emotional sensitivity also translates into intuition and some people say psychic abilities, but you know, again, it's not like they're out there bending spoons with their minds. They're not
yeah.
they're not that sort of thing, but their extreme sensitivity and their total connection with their emotions give them that extra something that it takes to be aware of things beyond the narrow band of physical light spectrum that we see as our world. So
mm-hmm.
they're picking up on stuff constantly
mm-hmm.
that a lot of adults are oblivious to, and so their emotions, you know, get buffeted by things like tension or even environment or pesticides or chemicals in the food. I mean, all of this has an effect on the children, and
mm-hmm.
they're here to keep us honest. So we need
mm-hmm.
to, instead of medicate them and say, well, you're just out of hand here, take this pill and you know, calm down,
mm-hmm.
we have to find out what's going on. Why mm-hmm. is the child acting like this?
Mm-hmm. So what would you tell, like, what kind of advice would you give to a parent who has a child as an indigo and, you know, needs some direction to do the right thing, to try to actually bring that soul into something mature and alive, really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what have you noticed with your children?
Well, you know, granted, I have the intuition that they both are. They just, you know, like you were saying, after 95. So I just, even though, you know, even when I was pregnant, I just knew that it was coming like that. And I do believe as well, and that may be a belief, but that they will have the tendency to choose parents who have a much more open consciousness or greater consciousness, or maybe not greater, but more awakened to those concepts in order to really fulfill what they're here for. Now, I have to say that the first one is very into he's got his point and he's going to go to it no matter what. He has this How can I say that?
He
knows what he wants.
Yes, exactly. And along with that comes the fact that he's probably very well guided by beings that are not in the physical. So he will fall into things and people will say, look at that, is amazing. And he will just find what he needs exactly at the moment because he'll
know
where to be at the right time for the right thing to happen. And yeah, absolutely. It's beautiful to watch that.
Definitely. But the second one, who is, you know, like a 15-month-old, so a little bit like a more baby one. However, his behavior is much more peaceful.
Hmm.
He's much more the compromiser. It's like he knows what he wants. Obviously, he's gonna tell you, but he speaks already. And
wow.
He speaks both languages, French and English, obviously not fluently, but he understands both, and he will repeat words on both languages at 15 months old. I don't know if it's,
that
you know.
That is very cool, yeah.
Yes. And so, but in a conflict situation with his brother, his brother will be more like, this is mine or leave it to me, and more like conflictual with it, where he will be like more, okay, I let that down, and I'm going to go get something else, or he's much more in the peace.
Hmm.
So I don't know if he's showing the way that you can actually get your way if and you don't need to be fusing to get it. You can be quiet and calm about it and find a compromise.
Right. And he's teaching the ability to shift focus too, because sometimes we get focused on something, it has to be this way. this is the way I asked for it, this is the way I want it. And often when people say, I say, have you asked for assistance from your guides or from God or whoever,
mm-hmm.
you know, whoever works for you?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, yeah, I've asked it, and it just never came. And I said, well, did you have a very distinct view of what was going to occur? And
mm-hmm.
they said, oh, yeah, I knew the guidance would come in this form. And often that's just not the way it works. It'll
come right.
totally in the back door. If you're not paying attention, you
mm-hmm.
will miss it. So
that's a good
what
point.
This is, it's a little boy?
Yes.
Yeah, what he's going to be very good at then is learning how to go with the flow and shifting
mm-hmm.
focus and being aware and just watching energy move
mm-hmm.
and seeing where the flow is. So
mm-hmm.
there are two different ways to be very empowered, and I think that's beautiful. And boy, what a chance for you
exactly.
to learn.
And you know what? It's what I said. I always, you know, granted I waited quite a bit to, and I was not really into, okay, I'm going to have children. I don't know. I'm not good enough. Who am I? Blah, blah, blah. Granted that I had them, and then they are my greatest teacher. I mean, every time I look at them, every time they're doing something, they're triggering something within me that talk about self-discovery. I mean, right there, they are empowering, they're allowing me to empower myself on a daily basis.
Isn't that fabulous?
It is fascinating.
Oh, that
to
is
me, it's
wonderful.
Fascinating.
See, and if parents can hold on to that, I mean, you certainly have a good handle on it, but a lot of parents don't. A lot of parents don't understand why they feel so triggered, and then they feel like bad parents, and then they fall into what I call the shame and blame syndrome,
yes.
and things just deteriorate from there. So often there's a lack of communication, and
mm-hmm.
there's just frustration all around. So
mm-hmm.
as adults, we can support each other, really,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of times the shame kicks in especially hard if people say your child is disruptive, your child is a bad influence, your child
mm-hmm.
is this, your child is that. That just spirals the parent into a really bad space. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, as adults and as parents, we need to support each other and say, well, Matt, you know, how can I assist you? How can I be a part of the solution for you? Is there
mm-hmm.
something, you know, that you need? Or
mm-hmm.
just some way so that they don't feel so alone and like they're being outcast from society because
mm-hmm.
of their kid.
Mm-hmm. And it's true that I think that what I seem to have observed when I was younger with parenting was really that, okay, we know better the world, and so, you know, you're a child, you don't know better. And that was somewhere, something that didn't fit with, well, why would I want to, you know, have a child and tell him, because I remember when I was a child, it was like, Mom, you don't see what I see. You don't realize that what you see is not what necessarily I see, and so I'm not going to leave it through, you know, your way. And granted, you know, she did what she had to do with the consciousness she had, and I understand it now. But then, you know, that gave me definitely this chance to be able to be, I think, a better parent by truly being this support system more than, okay, you don't know and I do, and so you're going to be following my step.
Right, right. And that's a really beautiful understanding that you have there, because the old energy of ownership of children
mm-hmm.
is being shattered. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's just not acceptable anymore to be under that impression that, well, you know, they'll do what I say, or they need to be a dentist, for example, or
mm-hmm.
any number of the ways that that old energy manifests itself. And, yeah, our parents, of course, they did the best they could. And you know, my mom says, oh, I did the best I could. She keeps saying it over and over. I said, Mom, I know. It's not about that. It's about learning from you and making different decisions. That's
yes.
all. It's, you know, it's just a choice.
Yes.
And, you know, so hopefully parents all over can support each other to do this, too, and double shift the schooling as well, because they'll just say, no, my child deserves better.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it's very interesting as well, because I have been really getting in touch with a lot of moms who have, you know, babies and little and toddler like I have. And every time you hear people's story about their kids, and you truly realize how different they are. I mean, they are just all unique and different. And then I cannot stop thinking, how can we all be so different, and getting in an education system that is making everything the same for everyone.
Right. That's
that doesn't
a really
work.
Good point. That's a very good point, and I wish more teachers thought that way as well. But of course, the teachers are being constrained by budgets and
that's true.
You know, the money, and they have to perform in the testing. The kids have to test, you know, at whatever level they have to be at. So the teachers
mm-hmm.
are under the gun too. But
mm-hmm.
here's the thing that I like to tell people too is, in this time of shifting, each one of us has a key to survival, and more than survival, though, to thriving during this shift and coming
mm-hmm.
through it in a whole new dimensional level, seeing things that, you know, like, oh, my goodness, where did that planet come from? That sort of thing. I mean, we're
mm-hmm.
talking huge new awareness of how we fit into the greater scheme of things. And
mm-hmm.
each one of us has a key, and it's called the heart. And all of us has a part to play. I
mm-hmm.
say, yeah, it's going to get bad, but that's okay because God has a plan and God
mm-hmm.
saved you. So we need to support everybody, not only the children, but also the adults, into following their heart and doing whatever it is that they feel, you know, they really feel moved to do. And if we support the children to explore their individuality, no matter what it looks like, no matter
mm-hmm.
what it seems like to the old way of thinking, you know, they could be the key to surviving and thriving. So
mm-hmm.
we all need to support them in this individuality. And I'm wondering, do you have any ideas on how to do that?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that I have put together a little workshop with a brand new exercise that seems to, when I give it to my students who came to do it, it appears that has opened, that was the key that you were talking about, that opened something.
Oh.
And what's interesting is that, I'm going to tell you, and that's really the first time that I'm telling that pretty much, because it's one of those, like, second guess. Well, you know, I woke up one morning with that exercise downloaded in my consciousness.
Oh, I love it.
I had to just write it down. And it was like, oh, my God, I just, like, oh, look at that. So, you know, I gave it to a friend. It's like, okay, do that and tell me. And she's like, wow, look at that. I know where to go. I know how to do it. It's like, and so it's called an IGPS. That's the name I call it for. It's an IGPS exercise because it's a GPS. It's really giving, it's like a compass. It gives you the direction from your authentic self. It has nothing to do with what the ego or what the society wants you to do, but it's showing you on a map, concrete map on a paper, where it's like a map quest of your life purpose.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that is awesome.
So I'm putting it together right now, and I'm going to do actually a workshop in September in Austin about it. It's going to be the first one. But it seems, and I have it done probably about 20 times now, and the 20 people who have done it, my husband included, and granted, if you want to take the opposite targeted audience to that type of stuff, then you take my husband. But he did it in very, you know, open to it, but was amazed, totally amazed with what came through.
So is this information on the internet? Do you have a website?
Absolutely not yet.
Okay.
Because that came about, I would say, a month and a half ago. And because, like, you are talking about that shift right now, it's just, like, things are boiling in my life. And then, granted, you have the babies, so you need to juggle with both. But these things is so intense, and, you know, I dream pretty much every night about it. There's something coming through it. So I know it's important, but it's not out there yet. But I promise you I'll send it to you as soon as I have it.
Please do. And I'm actually working with a bunch of people to put up a website that will offer people resources and a library to help them with the shift. So
okay,
it sounds
okay.
Like your seminars or workshops or whatever would fit right in there.
Yes, definitely. It was really, I remember one of my students who did it, who was kind of I know exactly what my destination, where I should go. This is, everything is there. And then, you know, I know exactly where I can pick up my energy to create that. And then when she did the exercises, she actually realized what she thought was her destination was actually her fuel.
Wow.
And what was her tool was actually her anchor. And what was her anchor was actually her whatever. There's like six big areas. And then she actually realized that that's the reason why, even though she had some understanding, it was never created the right, like, it didn't seem to be created the way she thought it was, because her authentic self really said, no, you need to figure that out, because if you really want to leave from that authentic self that you are, then your destination needs to be that and not that. And so I'm not going to let you take this energy to put it there. You're going to be blocked systematically. Mm-hmm. And she was.
And that is how it works, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
Totally. And she shifted right after that seminar, or that exercise that we did. She shifted it, and suddenly, I mean, it was like gate open wide in front of her.
Wow.
And it is something. And really, you were talking about that intuition, but it was like waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning because my child woke me up. And I know that he's part of it too, because if I had not woken up at 2 o'clock that morning by his cry, I wouldn't have remembered it.
Okay.
So I know that he has collaborated with it.
Right. Well, sure.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Uh-huh.
So it sounds like you've developed a way for people to identify belief systems. Is that right?
There's identifying the belief system. It's part of the seminar. And then from there, realizing that what they've been doing has been done most of it through their ego self, and that they have another part that is the authentic self. And this authentic self has, lies within the heart. And then from there, this is, if you pick the energy that goes through there, there's this life purpose that is lying right there for you. And if you decide to kind of take a magnifier, like my IGPS is like magnifier, because the map of your life purpose is lying right there in your heart chakra. And if you have that magnifier, which I believe is the IGPS exercise, then suddenly it put it like in a three-dimensional, and you have it in front of you. It's like, okay, where should I go? Oh, here is my destination. Here is my tool to get there. Here is the energy and how I can get my fuel. Here is the anchor. Like, if something is happening in my path, then I know that I can always go back to that during, hardship or like challenges. If it seems to be too hard right now, I can always go back to that because I feel safe within that heaven. And so I can go back to my path and go back to my destination. It's kind of confusing when I probably explain it like that, but that's why it's not out there yet. It needs to be really put down. But it is, I call that a transformational tool to self, to greater consciousness. And I do truly believe that that's what it is.
Oh, it sounds like it. I mean, absolutely. And I'm sitting here wondering, is there any way you could apply it or bring it to the level where children could use it?
It's actually, and that's what I was, it's very fun because everyone was telling me, well, that is fun to do. It's easy to do. And it's so, it asks both sides of the brain to be used because you need to be getting the information from your intuitive side. It's not your brain is not your information are really coming from your heart chakra after a meditation that we do, and then and after that it's shown as a it's like a design, so your right brain is actually stimulated.
Wow.
So you have both brains stimulated at time, but it is not like a hard concept at all. It's not a hard exercise, and so it is totally feasible with kids. When I said kids, probably, it's probably like, I would say, again, 10, 12 years old probably. Before that, I'm not sure that they're going to, again, maybe I'm wrong on that. I don't know.
Well,
I've never tried.
That's a good target age, too, because that's when they start shifting from the joy of simply getting up every day, I mean,
you're right.
Sometimes it happens earlier than that, unfortunately, to some children. But in general, middle school is where stuff really starts to happen. And if they can hold on to something that they
mm-hmm.
know to be real and that they
mm-hmm.
know is part of their past,
mm-hmm.
I think that would make a huge difference in a child's life.
Oh, definitely,
huge.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to do it on mine. I tell you that much.
Well, if you have kids to practice with, I mean, I really, really encourage you to do that because
mm-hmm.
if you can figure out how to bring this to children, I think that would be just a wonderful gift.
Yes, and you know, it can. It's funny because about 3 years ago, I had a reading, and this woman was telling me, "Oh, you're writing a book." I said, "Yeah, well, yeah, I did write a book." And she said, "Well, you're going to be writing something else." I said, "Oh, okay. Well, you know," I said, "you know, I like writing, so that makes sense." And she said, "Well, it's going to be something for kids." And I was like, "Are you what? Kids? But the deal is, I think that it's actually because I see how, you know, so much they are so much power, and that it's fascinating to me to see those little creatures being able to, you know, teach me so much that if I can just send it back to them, then, you know, I think that would be my greatest adventure.
I think that would be wonderful. Please do that.
Yeah, I will. I will do it, Jacqueline, I promise.
Excellent.
And I will send you it as soon as it's done.
Oh, I would really love that. That would be mm-hmm. great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It is a very cool tool. It was very exciting when I put it down because, again, you know, when you know, it's one of the other points that I experienced, like living from the authentic self, living from that heart that we were talking at the beginning of the show. It does come so naturally. There's no, it doesn't seem to be hard, to be time consuming, to be a lot of effort. It's actually fun. It's just come through like, oh my God, I've always done that and I like doing that and it's my passion and it's fun.
Right. And that's why we're here. We're here to have fun. We're not
that's
here
it.
To suffer.
That's it.
You know, I don't know why we wander around feeling like we're here suffering. We're doing time on planet Earth and then once we die, then it's all going to be better because it doesn't
mm-hmm.
work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that what you're talking about is actually living the way we came here to live. So I think that's great.
Yes. And, you know, it's funny because when I did that exercise on me, it just, you know, it pulled down. It was like, oh, that's why I'm here doing what I'm doing. And it was like, again, it's so revealing. It was, to me, very powerful. So, yeah, I think we're onto something. We're onto something.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. So I do hope you send it to me.
I will. I promise.
Okay.
I will.
Okay.
All right. So what else? Do you have? You're not only a great metaphysical teacher, but you have written a book, and I wanted to spend a little time to talk about it. Can you explain to us what you have? What the book is about.
Okay. I began the book back in 1990 during the first Gulf War when I was watching the war unfolding on TV like the rest of us, and I was realizing that there was really more going on than we were being told. It was an intuitive understanding, and beyond that, I really didn't know what the story was, so mm-hmm. I just made it my mission in life to find out. And so I interviewed and I talked to people, military, politicians, it just, you know, the universe of God handed me these incredible people to interview. They had exactly the information that I needed at exactly the time I needed it. I mean, it was really an adventure. And because I have a degree in creative writing, I took the information and I made it into a thriller, a fiction book. And it had to do with terrorism in the United States and all the things around it. And it's a conspiracy and you know, it's this whole saga, page-turning saga that surprised me as I wrote it. I mean, I was like, oh, I can't believe that happens next. I mean, just like you're saying, you know,
uh-huh.
when it's downloaded like that, it's just fun.
Uh-huh.
And it was on an editor's desk when 9/11 happened, and because it was so similar to what happened, they pulled the plug on the book. So I self-published it a couple years ago,
uh-huh.
and all the information that I found is in there. And every time something comes out about, you know, how we were misled about Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these things, I'm always saying, wow, yeah, that's in the book, too. Wow, that's in the book, too. So, you know, and, of course, the central theme, I'm not going to tell because it would give the whole thing away, but the central theme is really eye-popping. So if I'm right, we're really, really, really in deep water.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, politically.
Yeah, I mean, we probably are. That's true. Where can we find your book?
Oh, it's on Amazon.
On Amazon, okay.
It's called The Thief of Sacred. And it's on Amazon.
And I love the cover.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, the cover is beautiful. It's so right to the point to me. It was like, wow, the design is just perfect.
Yeah, I had a teenager do it for me. I figured, you know, I had to get to the new consciousness, so I had
exactly.
to do it for me.
Well, good for you. So, and you have a website where we can, like, people can reach you and and eventually get in touch with you?
I'm available on email or anything like that. I do have JacquelineLloyd.com and TheThiefOfSacred.com. It goes to the same place.
Okay. And you do workshops where we can see you or you're doing seminars?
Right now I'm concentrating on the radio. Like I said, I had a tremendous... Oh, did we get cut off?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I've been doing so much about the children right now that's where I'm focusing, and I'm going all over the country using the radio. So morning shows from the East Coast to the West Coast. So that's where I've been doing. So no workshops right now, but I will put them on the website if I start doing them again.
All right, very cool. Well, thank you so much for all your insights, your vision, your comment, and your stories, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. I think it was a great time, and I'm sure everyone learned a lot from it.
Well, I think you're right. 55 minutes does go really fast when you're having a good
time. Isn't
class.
It?
Thank you for giving me this opportunity, and thank you for teaching me, too.
Well, you know what? It's always a good pleasure to receive people like you and sharing, you know, our points of view and our experiences, because I think it really enrich each other. So thank you again, Jacqueline.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing your email.
I will. You have a good evening.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Listener, thank you so much for your time. And one more time, Conscious Fitness and Divine Body hopefully gave you some answers about your own personal quest to awakening or expanding your greater consciousness. And if you want to know more, then I'll meet you next week, same time, 7 p.m. Pacific time on BBS Radio. Have a good evening. Bye.
Can I fly away back to yesterday? Somewhere in my heart we'll never be apart. Every time